Welcome to the newbies and the old heads. You're listening to Here for the Dads podcast, a space where fatherhood meets real conversations. I'm your host, Meyer, a proud husband, veteran, and a father of five. Yes, I said five. I have four wild boys, and I finally got my baby girl. This platform was born from a simple truth. Men, especially fathers, just aren't talking enough. That's why this community matters. It's a space to learn, grow, and to know that you're not in the dark alone when the hard stuff hits. Whether you're in the thick of raising little ones, trying to keep your marriage strong, or just figuring out how to show up better, we're building this together. So whenever you're in the fatherhood journey, just know I'm here for you. Welcome to the conversation. What's going down, people? It's your boy, Meyer Carl, back again with another episode of Here for the Dads podcast. Today, we're sitting down with Joanne. We're going to be talking about speech pathology. She is a speech language pathologist, and we're going to break down what every dad needs to know about speech and language development. Whether you're a dad babbling or have a child who is babbling, talking up a storm, or somewhere in between, this episode is going to be packed with practical tips to support their growth. But before we start, I want to say thank you, Joanne, for joining me and joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Not bad at all. I'm going to start with this question. Can you just give us a little bit of background about yourself and just your career in speech language pathology?
Yeah. So I actually started my interest in speech language pathology started because I was evaluated by a speech pathologist when I moved into the States. And so that was my introduction to the field. Speech language pathology is not something that we have in Haiti. So that was a whole new career that I was exposed to. I was very interested in pediatric medicine very early on. So I thought that I was going to become a pediatrician. And then during undergrad, you know, you start taking the med school classes. You start taking the med school classes. And I was a biology major, and I was doing the pre-med track, and I was just like not loving it. I was like, if this is what it's gonna take for me to just like get to med school,
right.
I just don't know if I'm gonna have enough to get me over the hump.
Gotcha.
And so I started exploring my options, and I took a Foundations of Human Communications class in undergrad, and it was the end of my sophomore year. It was the second semester of my sophomore year. And I just ended up falling in love with that class. So I had to make a very hard decision to change my major at the end of my sophomore year.
Ooh.
Which my very Haitian parents were like, girl, you got 4 years. We don't care what you do, how you do it. You have 4 years. And so I changed my major. And then I also picked up a public health minor along the way. And so I was 18 credits straight through all the way to senior year.
Oh my goodness. I would have been stressing out.
I was stressing out. I was stressed out, but I said, oh God, my parents told me I have 4 years, not four and a half, not four and a little bit, 4 years. That's it.
And they're serious about that thing. I got West African parents. So like, they are very serious about that thing. If I were to call back and say, hey, I'm switching this up, they're like, I don't care what you do.
Yeah.
You're not coming home.
Yeah, no.
You're not coming home with anything other than what we sent you there with.
Exactly.
There for.
Yes. So that was my experience. So I just kind of powered through. I did two semesters where I was just like, I gotta get it done. But I really felt invigorated to do it. So that's when I knew. I kind of always felt like pediatric medicine was an interest of mine, but maybe it was my parents' dream versus speech language pathology. That felt like it was a passion and it was also my dream. Like I really, really felt like it was something that I wanted to do. So I went on and I pursued my master's in speech language pathology. I actually specialized in medical speech language pathology. But along the way and starting to see clients and doing my clinical rotations and doing my clinical fellowship, I really found my way back to pediatrics, which is how I ended up here. So I'm now a private practice owner in New Jersey, and I see pediatric clients, and I support late talkers and also multilingual families. So that's my story.
Now, is this all under like the umbrella of child development? Is that correct? Or is it, can you help me out with saying like what's the difference?
So it's a branch of early childhood development. So you can look at different aspects of childhood development in terms of looking at communication, right? In terms of looking at motor skills, which is the little and the big movements that you do with your body, looking at sensory integration and how kids move their body in space. So that would be occupational therapy. So it does fall under the larger umbrella of early childhood development. And also like pediatrics, but then even further, like early childhood, speech language pathology in terms of early childhood. Why can't I talk today? Speech, I need speech therapy. But even more so, under the umbrella of speech language pathology is pediatric speech language pathology, and under that umbrella is early speech and language development. So it's gotcha. There are multiple subspecialties.
Got you.
Yeah.
What drew you towards pediatrics and child development altogether?
Yeah. So I did a internship actually when I was in high school, where I shadowed an occupational therapist, a physical therapist, and a speech language pathologist. And I just remembered the occupational therapist was fabulous, but she specialized in hand therapy, and I was just like, I'm so
hand
bored.
Therapy?
Yes.
Like hands.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So some people, if they've had traumatic accidents or if they've had any neurological events, they might lose function in their hands or like specific small movements, like muscle movements in their hands. So they would go and see a hand therapist. And I just remember being like, whew, this is very repetitive. Like, I don't know if this is, it's not really doing anything for me. And then I remember I shadowed the physical therapist and everything was like so fun and so fast paced. And I was just like, ooh, there's like a lot to learn. And then I went to go see the speech therapist, and she was a pediatric speech therapist. And I felt like in real time, I could see the progress. So every time the client would come into the clinic, this was at a hospital, every time they would come into the clinic, I feel like at the end of the session in real time, I could see the progress. And they would just get so excited that they were communicating. And I was just like, I think this is where I want to be. Like, I always knew pediatrics was something that I was interested in. But pediatric speech therapy is just like something that drew me in. And I've tried the hospitals, I worked at the schools where I worked with older kids, and I was just like, no, I like the really little ones. And I also like to play, and I think I'm an artist at heart, and I'm very creative at heart, and I get to do that with little friends all day, which I'm very thankful for.
That is so awesome. I'm glad you got to pass this path, really, too, because sometimes you don't know what's out there. Like, you got an idea, you put this umbrella together, like, I'm gonna go do this, but on the inside, there's so many different parts of you that's not getting met. So you're like, okay, do I pick up a hobby? Do I find another job? But when you get to kind of put all of those together, it really feels good.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't think that I cared much for being around kids. And I mean, I love my own kids. I have four, by the way. I have four boys and I have another one on the way.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until like I started coaching and I was like, wait, I really do like this. Like, I love seeing them learn. It's invigorating, right?
Yeah.
And you just get the energy, and I like to be loud and I like to do stuff. And it just feels good. And a lot of the kids are always drawn to me. I'm starting to learn that, too. So I'm kind of on that path. I'm on that path right now.
Yeah.
So I love doing that. But
that's amazing. I love that for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And as we talk about, like, speech therapy and your career and what you do, I've had my own experience with it. And when I say my own, I'm talking about through my kids.
Mm-hmm.
My now 4-year-old just finished doing speech therapy while we were in Norfolk, Virginia. We're actually looking for a new speech therapist now. But I remember what it was like in the very beginning when my wife brought up the idea of getting a speech therapist.
Yeah.
To be completely honest with you, I was like on the inside, like so against it. I was almost very defensive.
Yeah.
When we only have one kid older than him. So that was like the first one we've seen reach milestones and hit different wickets as we go back to the doctor. And all I kept saying to myself was like, oh, he's going to catch on. He's going to catch on. He's going to catch on. And yes, he was catching on to a lot, but my wife was like, but we can help him. Like, why allow him to struggle when we can help him? And I'm like, well, I understand everything he says.
Mm-hmm.
She said, well, not everybody else is all the time.
Yeah.
And I had to take a step back a little bit. I had to ask myself, like, why am I so defensive about this? And I think it came a point where I was so afraid for him to be labeled or to think that there was something wrong with my child. And I didn't want him to need help from anybody else but inside of the home. But it wasn't until she continued to have these conversations with me. She said, how about I set this up? You come to the first meeting. And then after that, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
And when I sat in that room and watched how much fun my son was having, and to watch even on day one him make changes in his speech, yeah. I was sold. And I was like, man, I can't believe I've been holding my kid back from something so great and such as this. And honestly, I think that was my first step in understanding how I felt when it comes to that, and how mm-hmm. other fathers may feel when it comes to that. I said, we need to have these conversations about IEPs,
yeah.
child development altogether, speech therapy. Is this something that is common that you see in your field?
So that reaction, is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. So I have to say, although I do think that speech language pathologists are great people and we provide a great service, it's scary. I mean, even in the name, it's like speech language pathology, right? Which implies right. that there's something inherently wrong, which I don't love the name either, right? I just wish that we were like speech and language practitioners or
right.
something like that, right? So like even in the name, I think it implies that there's something just inherently wrong. Whereas I really feel like speech language pathology is just an added support, and sometimes kids need added supports. And what I say is, like, I wear glasses, right? Like, I have some trouble with my vision. I need some extra support. It's kind of like that. It's just a different intervention, but then you just have a physical person who's helping. But I understand how it can feel scary, and it's just hard to know just how much support do they need? How long are they going to need that support? And then I also notice that a lot of parents will start to internalize the fact that their child needs a support. What did I do wrong? What didn't I do? Should I have done this? Should I have done that? And so I think a lot of parents start to take that as a reflection upon themselves, but it just so happens that some kids need a little extra support, and then some kids don't need the support. And I'm sure that you saw that also with your kids, right? Like, you had one child who needed speech therapy, and then your other children didn't. So I think it's just something that happened. It's like going, if you had a stomach ache, you would go to the doctor. If your child needed, you know, help communicating, you would go to a speech language pathologist. But it's definitely something that I see in my practice for sure.
Yeah. And I think it might have something to do, without going too deep into it, like the way I was raised too, like mm-hmm. In the Black community,
yeah.
at least hearing that anybody needed help
yeah.
was like, you think you're broken. Like, nobody wants to go and get any type of help, yeah. any type of label. You don't want to go to the hospital and say that you need this, or go to a doctor and say that you need that. Yeah. And I think that was a little bit, I was conditioned by that in a yeah. sense. So my yeah. first thing was defense.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and I mean, taking it back to the Black community, right? I think, one, there's just a general mistrust of medical providers. And in speech language pathology, 92% of speech language pathologists are white and female. And so even when you're going to go look for help, right, the help doesn't look like you. So that could be a first kind of like wall that you put up. And you're right, like our first instinct in our community is not to go out and seek that medical support. Sometimes it's to pray about it or to wait it out. But what I tell families is, one, because I do consults with families that are just like, you know, we're just going to pray about it. And I always say to them, you know, God created speech language pathologists, right? Like, do you believe in God? Like, God created me to be able to help you. Like, he created the safe space for you and the support for you. And then also waiting, right? Especially when kids are this young, it's time that's passing. We want to ideally catch kids in the first 3 years, because that's when their brains are making all these big neural connections, right? Every day your child is learning something new when they're under three. So we don't want to wait and see. I tell families, let's check and see, right? Let's do an evaluation. We might be wrong. There might be nothing that we need to worry about, but at least we've taken care of that instead of letting kids slip through the cracks.
I love that. One yeah. of the coolest things I've seen some schools do is an invite speech language pathologist to the school.
Yeah.
And you just kind of are able to set up every child. I think they set a note home, was like, hey, yeah. would you like for them to be seen? And it's completely free.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get a write-up afterwards. And then exactly. that way, if you haven't noticed anything, there may be a few things that they can get aided with or get help with.
Yeah.
And you talked about that early intervention, like before they turn 3 years old.
Yeah.
For some fathers who are listening who may not know what some of those milestones are, and I'm sure there may be a lot of them, but could you maybe go through some of the key milestones
yeah.
in speech and language development from birth on yeah. to maybe around 3 years old?
Yeah. So let's talk about, so I'm going to break it up until the first year, and then we'll do 6 months from. So in the first year, right, we're looking for kids to have those little milestones or like those little skills that come before first words. So we're looking for kids to vocalize, right? So baby's going to be cooing, ooh, And they're going to start babbling, right? And then they're going to start jargoning, right? And jargoning is when it sounds like they're having a conversation, but it's mostly nonsense. So your child is super determined and they're very, yeah, it's hilarious. They're very confident and they're just like, and right? They think that they're having a conversation with you because they hear you and the other adults in their lives having those conversations, but they don't have the vocabulary yet. So they're like, I know the rhythm. I know what it's supposed to sound like. And it's supposed to sound like a lot, but I don't have the words. So I'm just going to kind of fill it in, right? And then we're also looking for kids to be able to imitate, right? So is your baby copying your facial expressions? Are they copying or trying to copy some sounds? Does it look like they're copying some gestures or some actions? And also we want kids to have some meaningful gestures, right? This is all in the first year, even before the first word comes. We want kids to have some meaningful gestures, right? Are they starting to point? Are they waving? Are they shaking their head no or shaking their head yes? Because before kids start to communicate using words, they will communicate using gestures. So we want to make sure that we have that foundation. Are they looking at you when you call their name or when you're telling them or showing them something? Are they sharing attention to the same thing that you're looking at? So you're looking at the bear, baby's also looking at the bear, and then you can do something with the bear. So we're looking for a lot of those pre-talking skills that come up before the first word. And then by the end of their first birthday, so really closer to like that 13 months, we're looking for kids to have at least 1 to 2 words. So that is the milestone. So I know that when families look at milestone information, it will have like a lower end of the range and then the dash, and then it'll have the higher number in the range. So the lowest number in the range is what we're looking for. That's what kids should have at a minimum. So at the end of the 12 months, we need them to have at least 1 to 2 words. If they have 5, that's great. If they don't have 5, but they have 1 to 2, we're still doing good. So that's what we
words
would be
like. Sorry to cut you off. For the words like dad, dad. Like, I know sometimes you might hear them just kind of babble, say dad, 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 but you're not really sure if they know what they're saying. Would you still consider or say that's correct? Or how do you know when they're really saying the word?
Yeah. So the word has to be intentional. Okay. Which means that they're saying it because Dada is here, right? Or they see Dada or a picture of Dada. Then it also has to be consistent, right? They're saying it more than 3 times. They have said it more than 3 times. And every time they see Dada, they use the same word to refer to that person. And then they also have to do it independently, which is we're not saying, say Dada, say Dada, say Dada, right? They're just saying it on their own just because they've seen that person walk into the room or they see a picture of them. So it has to be independent. It has to be consistent. And then, oh my gosh, what's the other word?
Super common one?
Yeah, no, I was thinking it has to be independent. It has to be consistent. And then I forgot the next one.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's because I cut you off. My brain is like constantly going. I just like I had to get that out there. So
no. It is. Okay. Oh, intentional. That's intentional. What it is. Yes, okay, it has to be independent and intentional and then consistent. So that's how we measure a word. So if your child is saying dada, but they're only saying it because you're going, say dada, it doesn't count as a word until they say it on their own. And then if they say it once and they never say it again, we can't count that as a word because we want them to say it consistently to know that, okay, they understand the meaning of that word. So that's how we would count a word. So that would be for the first year. So we're looking for at least 1 to 2 words. And then jumping to 18 months, we're looking for at least 10 words. So 10 to 50 words, if they have 50, that's great. But we're looking for them to have at least 10 words. And then we're also looking for them to start to answer questions, right? Mm-hmm. By looking at something. So where's the bear? They're not going to say, you know, it's under the sofa, but they're going to look. You know what? You'll be surprised. Some of my families are like, they're not answering questions. And I'm like, oh, well, how do you expect that they're going to answer the questions, right? Like, they're not going to use a short phrase yet, but maybe they might look or they might say, you know, chair, or they might say something else, right? To be able to respond to that question. And then at 24 months, we're looking for them to have at least 50 words. So they can have more, they can have up to 300 words, but if they have at least 50 words, then we're doing great. And then those words are mostly going to be words that they are using all the time or seeing all the time, right? They're seeing mom, they're seeing dog. A lot of kids, their first words or their first few words are like Fido or like whatever the dog's name is.
Yep, and whatever parents, the dog
means. Exactly,
because
and parents
that's what
will
they
say,
hear the most too. Is like,
that's what they hear the most. And parents will say, what about like mom or dad? But if you're saying all the time, you know, Fido, come here, Fido, go outside, Fido, they're hearing that word, they're seeing the dog, they're making the association, oh, that thing over there with the wiggly tail and all the fur, that's called Fido, or like, that's called Fido. So they might say that word first. Same thing with some parents will say, hey, why is he saying Dada first? Or why is she saying Dada first? Well, it's probably because sometimes, right, when moms stay at home, you spend all this time with baby, and as soon as that door flies open, you're like, look, it's Dad, and everybody's so excited, and you're jumping, right? Yeah.
You might have just did so. You made a lot of moms feel a lot better, and dads too, and trying to explain that.
Yeah.
Because we put so much pressure on ourselves, it's like, oh, they won't say mama, and I spent all this time with them, and la, 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 but now, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Good. Okay, I'm glad. Because if you're with them all day, right, likely, I won't say for everybody, but if you're with them all day, likely you're not going, I'm mama, see, mama, 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 right? Like, you're probably just going about your day, you're talking about what you're doing, you're playing games, but then as soon as, you know, Dad comes in, then it's like, Dad's here, Dad, hi, Dada, right? So now your voice is going up, you have that sing-songy voice, you're using that parent tease, you're using the facial expressions, we're using gestures, and we're saying the word a whole bunch of times, like, yeah, they probably might say Dada first, right? And if the role were reversed, right? If Dad is staying at home, and then Mom comes home from work, and you're just like, Mama's here, Mama, hi, Mama, then that their first word might be Mama. So that's a lot of times, that's what impact, right? What kids' first words are. Like, they hear it a lot, how you say it, how much meaning and excitement you also assign to the word. And then at 36 months, we're looking for, this is the biggest jump, which like gives my parents a heart attack. Because they're like, at 24 months, we go to from at least 50 words. And then at 36 months, we go to at least 250 words, which is like, parents are just like, how are we going to get there? But right, it's a big gap. But then kids between that 18 to 24 months, they are learning to say a new word every day. So you'll be surprised in that 6 months, kids will typically make it there. And then also I forgot to say between 18 to 24 months, that's when kids start to not only they're answering the questions, right, by looking, but then they're also starting to combine at least two words. So when kids have that the 50 words in their inventory, they have enough words to put them together. So just think, if you only had two words and the two words were go and mama, you can only say go mama or mama go. But if you have 50 words, then you have endless combinations that you can put together. So that's why around 18 months, kids will start to try to put those words together. And then at 24 months, they're answering questions by saying the actual word. So like, who's that? Dada. Where is it? Outside. So those would be the milestones for the first 3 years. And then at 3 years, your kids should have 3 to 5 word sentences too.
Yeah. And then they don't stop talking.
And then they're just chatty. and then I'm like, good luck.
Stop. Yeah. After that, it's like you beg for your child to start walking. And then they start walking. You're like, no, please stop.
Yes. And then they're everywhere.
You beg for them to start talking. And then they don't stop talking.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like at that 3 year mark, right? Between that like 33 to 36 months, that's when parents are just like, she won't stop asking me questions. Why this? Why is this? Why, mama? Why, dada? It's, they have that language. So now they're trying to use it to make sense of the world around them.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I love it because I have the older two, I have a set of twin boys who are 2 years old.
Okay.
And I feel like they're picking up phrases faster.
Yeah.
They might not always understand the phrase, but if they hear one of the brothers say it, they always say it. And the oldest has a thing where he's playing like Madden football. He always goes, ain't no way, ain't no way. And now I have two little twin boys walking around.
Ain't no way. Oh, that's so funny.
But I love it. And it's always the cutest thing. But as I'm hearing these words and like keeping the kids on track, when dads hear like their child is maybe not on track, what are the first steps that they should do?
Yeah. So I always recommend having a conversation with your pediatrician. And this advice is nuanced. And I will say this, right? Your pediatrician is trained clinically to have a nice broad understanding of pediatric development, right? So sometimes if you go to your, you know, pediatrician, you might say, hey, I'm really concerned about my child's speech and language development. They may say, okay, you know, let's get you, I'm going to write you a referral, or I'm going to recommend you to go see a speech language pathologist. And sometimes pediatricians might not have that response. And they might say, you know, let's take a little time, let's wait and see, let's give it a couple of months. And what I tell families is that you know your child best. So if you have a concern, follow through with the concern. Again, we just want to check and see and not wait and see. We might all be wrong. right? Like, you might have just kind of, like, you were a little bit too concerned, or you just had a concern and you just wanted to follow through, and, you know, you see a speech language pathologist and they tell you, nope, we're good to go. But that's what I always say. If you hear the let's wait, let's come back at 18 months, I just want you to know that that doesn't invalidate your concerns. It's hard as a pediatrician, right, to know every specific thing. That's why we have the speech language pathologists, right, who have studied this extensively, versus your general pediatrician is looking for, you know, are they healthy? Do they have, are we following the vaccination schedules? Any like falls or fractures? Are they sick? Things like that. But you do want to make that first course of action to have a conversation with your pediatrician. And then if your child is under 3 years old, you can actually call your state's early intervention program. So for early intervention, you do not need a referral. So you don't have to go to your pediatrician and say, hey, I'm really concerned, I want to go through early intervention for services. You can just go to, you know, whatever search engine that you use, you type in your state and then early intervention, and a number and a website should pop up. You're going to call, you're going to do a quick intake and say specifically what your concerns are, and then they'll send somebody to your house. For most states, not New Jersey, but for most states, for most states, early intervention is free, right? Like, the initial assessment is free and the services are free. And then for some states, like New Jersey, it's a cost share program, which means that depending on your household income and your household size, you might have to pay a portion and then the state will subsidize the rest. And that therapist, if you qualify for services, will come to your house or to your church or the park or wherever, because they have to provide the services in the natural environment. So if your child goes to a daycare that's in a church, that's where they have to provide the services, as long as that's where you want it. If, you know, they spend most of their time at the park, you're going to meet them at the park. So that's kind of how early intervention happens. And then your other option is just to go privately through a speech language pathologist. So you have private pay speech pathologists, or you have speech pathologists that accept insurance. With private pay, you would just pay out of pocket for the services. And then if your insurance has out of network benefits, they might reimburse you. Or you can just decide, I don't want to deal with all that, I'm just gonna use the insurance that I pay for and just go through a speech language pathologist that accepts insurance. So you have kind of like a three-part course of action that you can pursue, but definitely always have a conversation with your pediatrician. I find that a lot of my families are like terrified to have big conversations with their pediatricians, that when the pediatrician says, how's everything going? They say, okay, it's going good. And then that pediatrician is out the door.
Because they got 42 other people to feed today, too.
Exactly. They're very busy. So when they ask you, you know, you have to be very honest. And I know that it feels really like, it doesn't always feel the best. And sometimes you're a little worried, or like, what are they going to say? Just say no. Like, you know, I'm actually worried about their, you know, communication development. They're not saying any words. Like, you have to be very specific.
And I think that conversation has to start in the home, too.
Like, yeah.
Especially if there's two people in the home and you want, and you see that there might be something wrong, or you're concerned, you need to have that conversation, because it can differ between who might go to the doctor.
Exactly.
Or who might feel comfortable looking things up or have heard anything about it. So I know, like, for me, before I even started this podcast and started to get into the fatherhood space, there were so many different interventions and things that my wife was just exposed to on her social media, and she would just hear about it. She would just follow, and the moms would get to talking. And I'm like, babe, it made me more fearful when she would bring something up. When in fact, you just heard it and was like, okay, this could possibly be it. Like, we want to check. Let's check early. So she was way more comfortable than I was. And that's why I wanted to bring you on here today. Like, I've been following you and I've loved everything that you post. I love talking about the books. I love the work that you're talking we can do at home with our own kids. And now that I get a chance to spread it, I want more and more fathers to start talking about any and everything that comes with like child development, so that we get more comfortable with it. And so it gets more comfortable when we're having conversations with our health practitioners, or having conversations with our nurses, or going to the doctor too. And this might be a kind of quirky question, and it hopefully doesn't take us back a little bit, but we keep saying like speech language pathologists. At first I was just saying like speech therapist or, or whatever. But I really do like the name, and I feel like it matters a lot. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about maybe the difference between the word speech and language and like why that matters?
Yeah. So language is the message, right? So language is how we put words together to express a message, how we put words together to express a feeling, right? Or to communicate our wants and needs, versus speech is how we use our lips, our voice, our intonation, right? To be able to put that message together. So speech, for example, could be like voice therapy, right? Like I've done voice therapy during the pandemic. I did a lot of virtual therapy. And so I needed voice therapy because I had micro abrasions in my vocal folds, right? So I needed voice therapy. So that's a part of speech therapy. That's how I use this mechanism to communicate the message out. So what it sounds like and what the mechanics are. A kid who might need speech, right? Like just specifically speech therapy too, might be a kid who stutters, right? So that's, again, like the mechanics of getting the message out. Or a kid who can't make their R sound or their S sound. So that would be speech. Versus language is just how we put the words together to get the message out and to also understand language. So there's two parts of language. There's expressive language, which is how I get the message to you. And then there's also receptive language, which is how I understand the message from people around me. So there might be a child who understands messages or languages very well. So they have good receptive language skills, but then they have poor or limited expressive language skills. So in my practice, I see that a lot. So kids will come in and the parents are like, well, they understand everything I say, right? If I tell them, go put your shoes, you know, out front or go put this in their backpack, they'll understand, but then they're not saying anything. So that child, right, would have good receptive language skills, but then they would have limited expressive language skills. So the language part is the message that we're communicating. And then the speech part is how we put everything together to get the message out.
It makes a lot of sense, too, because even as an adult, when I go home and not just home, but with my cousins and stuff, and they're speaking their own dialect, I still remember a lot of the words and I remember the tones and just how you can put it together. I can't speak a lick of the dialect like anymore. Maybe I might have learned some while I was very, very young. But even today, like I couldn't, not bilingual. It's just like that. But
well, you're a receptive bilingual. So even within bilingualism, there's receptive bilingual, right? So which is you understand a lot of it. And this happens especially when kids leave, right? A place where the language is very prominent and they go to another place and then they're not getting that much exposure. So you're a receptive bilingual. So if you were, you know, at, you know, a family gathering, you would understand everything, but it's hard for you to be able to express yourself in that language.
So that's still very important. And I'm glad you're even saying that because I know a lot of people who might live in like a bilingual household and they're raising their children and they're like, I really want to teach them, but I don't know all the words. I don't necessarily know how to do it. Or they're going to school and I don't have that much time.
Yeah.
But speaking it around them could still be very important. Is what
Yeah. So if you want to expose your child to another language, right, just getting that exposure is chef's kiss, right? So you don't have to do it all the time and you don't even have to do it perfectly because I have a lot of families too, right? Probably in your situation who say, I understand the language, but I just don't feel super confident in communicating in that language. Can I still transmit that language to my child? Or I don't feel fluent enough is what I hear a lot. And it doesn't matter. And what I tell parents all the time is, who is fluent in any language? Right. Nobody, right? Like
nobody
we all make grammar mistakes. Like we're not speaking the language exactly how it was, you know, written to be spoken. So the heck with it. Just give them what you can is like what my friend who's a sociolinguist, Dr. Taylor Ben-Yahya, she says, give them what you can, like give them what you have. So if you don't feel like you're super fluent, but you have something, you can still transmit the language. And there are kids, right, who were given what their parents could give them, who then go on to study it in college. And then they feel a little bit more, you know, a little bit more like they have more of hold of the language. So you can still talk to your child in whatever language you feel comfortable using.
That is so good. And you mentioned micro abrasions, stuttering. I remember hearing like when we had pretty much every one of our childs, there's always like this check and they have a conversation about like tongue ties. Is that a thing? What exactly is that? And how could that affect your speech?
Yeah. So tongue tie is, so if you like lift up your tongue, I'll get close. Uh-huh. So that little string, yep, there it is. That little string that holds the bottom of your tongue down to the floor of your mouth, right? Mm-hmm. So for a lot of kids, not a lot of kids, but for some children, that string is so short, right? So then they don't have good range of movement of their tongue, right? So imagine if that string is so short. So here's your tongue. It's basically on the floor of your mouth. You can't really get it up to do anything. So that really restricts how freely their tongue can move around their mouth. Also, ties, right? They're called tethered oral tissues. They're not just for your tongue, right? So you can have a lip tie. Again, oh my gosh, this is so TMI. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome to the podcast. And look, I'm leaning in too.
Yes, everybody's learning. So, right, if you were to lift up here, you have one right here. And if you were to go here, you have one here. And you have some on the inside of your cheek. So you actually have...
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So you have lip... You have lip, like oral, tethered oral tissues. You have buccal, which is inside of your cheeks. And then you also have lingual, right? Anytime that tissue is really short, it anchors that part of your mouth down or, you know, in so that you can't move your lips, your tongue, your cheeks freely. So how that can impact children is, imagine if it's so tight that your tongue is just kind of like stuck to the floor of your mouth. When you're swallowing, right, your tongue needs to go up and back to get that food back. So we have some kids who might have trouble with feeding and swallowing, especially with babies when it's time for them to latch on to the nipple, right? So that they can, you know, drink milk and be breastfed. That's sometimes a lot of time, Lord, it's Monday.
This is perfect, though. It's like, as we're having a conversation about speech, like, hey, we're adults, we still do it, too. It's
yes, like, I do it all the time. Sometimes it's just like, oh, my gosh.
And what do they call that, too? A tongue tie, like you tongue tie.
Yes, your tongue is tied. Oh, my gosh. Okay, here we go. So when kids usually get diagnosed most with the tongue tie, or like that time frame, is usually when they're newborns and, you know, they're going to breastfeed and, you know, parents are just like, whoa, what's going on? They can't latch. A lot of times that's when a child would get a diagnosis of a tongue tie. That's not to mean that there's a direct correlation. It might be something else. But that's the time when a lot of kids tend to get a diagnosis of a tongue tie. Also, for a lot of speech sounds, your tongue needs to go up or it needs to go up and back, right? So like for the L sound, or the T and D sound, or the N sound, right? Nah, your tongue needs to go up. So if it's tethered again to like the floor of your mouth, that's kind of hard. So all of that can impact a child's speech and then also a child's feeding abilities. And then sometimes their breathing too. So I always recommend, right, if you take a look or if you think that it might be impacting it, have a conversation with your pediatrician. That's always like the first on the checklist, right? But then also go see a airway center dentist.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes. So airway-centered or airway-centric dentist. So that person is a dentist, again, that is going to specialize in the airway. And they also specialize in tethered oral tissues, which is what a tongue tie and a lip tie and a buccal tie is. So that's a subspecialty in dentistry. And then you can also go see an ENT, which is an ear, nose, and throat doctor. So I hope that helps.
Ear, nose, and throat. I do remember seeing that on the calendar. My wife, ear, nose, and throat doctor.
Yes.
I know in some areas it's really hard to get an appointment with.
Yes. Like,
very hard to get an appointment with.
Yeah.
But after leaving the speech language pathologist for the first time with my son, as I sat through one of the courses, I wanted to ask, like, how can I help at home? Because I was only sending him there pretty much, I think, once a week. Okay. And it was enough. And I remember I got him a little mirror because I remember she would hold the mirror up and show him how she would say certain words.
Yeah.
And she had a couple different games that she'd gotten from Target that he fell in love with. So now I'm at Target every week buying those too.
Giving them
but
your
I
money.
Wanted to know more than like maybe watching Miss Rachel or listening to Dora, which we'll get back to.
Yeah.
Like, what are maybe some ways that I can help my child at home increase or get better at their speech.
Yeah. So one thing that I'm going to say is model, 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 right? So whatever language that you want your child to use, if they could use it, that's the language that I want you to model. So if your child is saying no words, you can model single words, right? If they're not saying anything at all when they're hungry or want milk, you can say, oh, milk, let's get milk, right? Milk. And then you can use some gestures and also ASL, which is American Sign Language. If you have knowledge of it, or you can go online and find a few signs, go to a reputable person. Ideally, you want to learn from a deaf person, because sometimes, you know, the richness in the culture of the language can be lost in translation when you're being taught the language by a person who's not deaf. So I always say a deaf person is the best, you know, kind of like place to go, like a resource like that. But you want to model the language that you wish that your child could use if they could. So if they're only saying single words, then you're going to model the next level up, which is 2 to 3 word phrases. So if they're only saying milk, now you can say, I want milk, right? And you always want to model the language from their perspective, right? They wouldn't say if they wanted milk, you want milk. They would say, I want milk. So you're going to model it from their perspective so that when they're using the language, they can use it that way.
And your elevated speech, I'm taking like pointers from too. Is that important to also use?
Yeah.
I know some dads feel kind of weird doing it unless they're like at home by themselves. But how important is that as well?
Yeah. So it's called parentese. And parentese is a way of speaking that lights up a child's brain, right? And it has that higher pitch. It has that sing-songy kind of a melody, right? And then you're also emphasizing specific words and you're slowing down. So the perfect example, and I know that we're going to come back and talk about it, but is Miss Rachel, right? So Miss Rachel does a really, really good job at using parentese, right? She's like, right here, like, where is it? Or let's put it in, put it in, put it in, put it in, right?
Yeah, look, exactly. I'm pretty sure every dad listening to this did that same thing as you did it. We even remember.
Yeah, so she pauses and she has these big bright facial expressions. She's using that sing-song pattern and then she goes up a couple of octaves, right? So her pitch is really high. It feels really weird. Like, I naturally have a really, really low pitch. So it feels very, like, it's kind of like an outer body experience when you're doing it. And the first couple of times you're doing it, you feel really silly, but your child loves it. So I would actually give people a challenge, right, who are listening to the podcast to try it, right? If you have a little one at home, I would say anything under 3. Just try to just have a conversation or like a play scheme with them just in your regular voice and then change it up, or read a book, right? And just kind of like your regular voice and then change it up and try the parentese. That really, really makes a difference. And the research, right? Like, brain studies actually show up that the kids' brains are lighting up when you use that parentese. Yeah. So use parentese and then repeat. It might feel like you're saying the same word all the time, right? But I tell parents, right, choose a word or a concept that you want to focus on. You can talk about it throughout the day, or you can talk about it throughout an activity. So if you want open to be kind of like the word of the day, you can talk about opening the door, opening the cereal box, opening their toy chest, open the book, let's open, open, right? And then every time you turn the page, even though you're turning the page, you can still say, open, or more open, right? So using a lot of repetition, and then get down to their level. So I don't know how tall you are. I'm 5'8", right? So most kids that I work with, they like hit me at my knee or below, right? And if you're going throughout your day and you're talking to them, right? You're talking to them, let's go here, let's go there. Like, this child is seeing your kneecaps all day.
It's like they can hear your voice, yes, but it's all kneecaps. It's like, we saw it on Proud Family and I think Powderpuff Girls. There was always like one character was like way up there, but you could only see the body.
You can that's always see, yeah, that's what they're seeing all day. It's like the voice of God, and they're just like, where is this coming from? Right? So we want to come down to their level, because kids need to see, kind of like how you said your speech therapist would get a mirror and she would get close and show your son, right, how to make those sounds. So kids need that. They need to be able to see how you're using your lips and your tongue and your face and your cheeks to be able to say those words so that they can do the same thing. So I know that it can get really uncomfortable, but I want you to either, you don't have to always come down to their level, right? I say get face to face, because sometimes that just helps families a lot better, especially if you have mobility issues. So you can either squat down on the floor, or you can like bend at the knee and then sit down on the floor on your bottom, or you can squat, or you can bring them up to you, right? You can pop them up on a sofa or pop them up in a high chair, or even when you're buckling them into the car seat, right? That's a really good opportunity where they're already at eye level, where you can model language to them. So as much as you can, like, you have to do your other adult things, but as much as you can, when you're talking to them, try to get face to face with them. So I think that would be kind of like my top tips. And then also take advantage of routines. You don't have to create a whole play scheme. Yes. Like, whatever is already happening, don't add to your day. Like, don't create more work for yourself. Because I think a lot of parents are just like, I don't have time to work on language. And I'm like, what are you doing every day? And this is not even me being facetious. I'm just like, why are we adding? No, you don't need to add anything. Don't add anything. Tell me what your routine looks like. So when I'm doing consults or if I'm doing audits, I'm just like, what do you do every day? Like, walk me through what your day looks like. We do breakfast at this time. And I'm like, okay, when you're doing breakfast, I want you to, instead of just giving them the food, saying, oh, do you want a banana or do you want a, I don't know, orange or a cereal, right? You've just offered them a choice. Now they have to use language. Even if it's pointing or saying the word, now they have to use language to tell you what their choice is, right? Or when you're opening up, I don't know, like when you're doing the laundry, right? You can say, oh, the clothes are dirty. It's time to wash. Pee, they're stinky, right? Like, yeah, so that's the language. So instead of adding a specific time to work on language, just take whatever's happening in your day, then add language to that routine.
Mm. How do you feel about baby talk? I wanted to ask because my mom was very serious with me as we were like teaching our kids and working on speech and everything. She was like, don't talk to the kids like that.
Yeah.
Talk to them like a normal human being. That is how they're going to learn.
Yeah. Their words. Yeah.
And I, even for my oldest, I have to say the same thing to him because it's fun. Like, he wants to say, or like just use these wah-wah and things of that nature. And it's cute, right? But maybe it doesn't help. And I wanted to hear from a speech language pathologist, like, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. So no baby talk. And baby talk, just to clarify, baby talk is when we use like the nonsensical version of a word. Like, you know, look at your little toesy woesies, or like, you want your wawa, right? Or like your bawi or something like that, right? Or like your baba. So we want to, it sounds really cute. It sounds really stinking cute. And just like, instinctually, when you're looking at a baby or a small child, you just turn into like an infantilized version of yourself, and you just want to like pinch their cheeks and like your shoulders go up and you just like, right? Like, that happens instinctually. That's what's supposed to happen. But what that doesn't do is give them functional language, right? So we want to give them functional language. So what you can do is you can still use that high pitch, right? That parentese, and you can still use that melody, but give them the adult version of the word. So when I'm saying wawa, we're going to say water. Now your child might say wawa on their own, but that's only because as children are learning to communicate, they will sometimes shorten a word. They will sometimes drop a sound that is really tricky, right? So that's why you hear a lot of kids will say baba instead of bottle, because, oh man, that T and that L sound is really, really tricky. So as kids are learning to say words, they might say that. So when your child uses baby talk or when they have errors, I want you to still praise them, but then give them the adult version of the word. So if they say baba, baba, you can say, let's get your bottle. That's right. You want your bottle. Bottle, let's get your bottle. Here's your bottle. Good asking, right? So you still want to praise them, but then you've also just given them the language that you would want them to use. And the thing that I will say about baby talk is you're using nonsense words, right? And also there's no grammatical structure. It's just kind of like a whole bunch of, right? And you wouldn't want your kid to go out and communicate in that way as an adult. So we just want to give them the grammatical structure. We want to be able to give them the actual words, even though it sounds really cute. Yeah that's my take.
That's good. Thank you
Yeah.
And now let's go into like resources a little bit. And I want to talk about books and other things that we can use at home, but I want to start with screen time because I think that might be one of the first aids or resources that a lot of people have access to. But we all have a certain type of shame when it comes to it. Like, we're all looking for a balance. We're all looking for the right kind of apps and stuff. And I want to say the very first one that was related to speech language pathology or speech therapy at all was Miss Rachel. Like, I fell in love with seeing that. I don't even know if it was posed to me online or sent to me or anything like that, but I could hear the voice, and what I thought might be annoying really wasn't. It was still sing-songy, and I actually used it to help my kids say mommy for the first time. Mommy, can you say mama's name? And they actually started doing it. I was like, oh, wow, like, this is so cool. What do you think about Miss Rachel? What do you think about screen time and her correlation? Like, did she blow up, like, the language world, like, speech therapy world? Like, did it become something to talk about more?
Yeah.
And I know I just gave you 15 questions to answer at once, but I'm sorry.
That's okay. That is okay. So I will say, I have to say that I'm very grateful for Miss Rachel, because I feel like she put kind of like a magnified lens on the world of speech and language delays. Her son also had a speech and language delay, and I think that's what inspired her journey. And she talks about that a lot. And her show and her programs have come from her trying to support her child. And I think it was also especially during the pandemic that this was happening. So I am very thankful for her, for sharing her story and for sharing her content, because I feel like that magnetized, right? Speech and language delays, they do exist, and you can get help, and here are some things that you can do at home. And also, like, there are these great people who are called speech and language pathologists. You should check them out. Like, I'm very thankful for that. And also, I love Ms. Rachel.
Yeah, she's just awesome.
Yes, we love her. She's fabulous. So here's what I will say about screen time. I want families to step back from thinking that any show is really educational, right? Like, shows are meant to really be entertainment for kids, and there's not a specific aspect of any show that makes it educational. And what I tell families is that screen time is really what you make it. So it's about how you use that screen time to be able to support and encourage development. So whatever show that you watch, you can really use that to build on some of the skills that your child has to get them to the next step. So when you are watching a show, first of all, try to make sure that it's not a show that is super fast paced, right? Some shows are just like every
is that
second
what they mean by something, like, overstimulating.
Exactly. A show that is not super overstimulating, or it doesn't have like those really fast paced like primary colors, right? And things are just moving fast, and there's a plot, and your child doesn't really understand, and things are just moving too fast. So try to find a show that is slow paced and not overstimulating. And if the show is a show that they really enjoy, but it moves really fast, if you are watching on a smart TV, or if you're watching on like a YouTube app or something else where you can stream it, you can just go into settings and slow it down. So you press that gear button and you go down to 0.5 or 0.75, whatever slows it down so that your child is actually gaining access to the language.
That just blew my mind.
Yeah.
Like, that's not like it would have made so much sense to do. Yeah. I listen to books all the time and I speed it up. I would have never thought to just slow it down.
Slow it down. Yes, slow it down. Especially if you have a smart TV. You just go in there in the settings and you slow it down. So that's going to give your child access to the language instead of it just being moving pictures. Because when they're talking this fast, at this point, they're just watching pictures move, right? And we don't want that. The other thing that we're going to do is have that remote in your hand, because we want to use the pause button. There are so many opportunities where I feel like a lot of shows don't pause, which is why I do like Miss Rachel, because she will pause, right? And she kind of has that expectant, we call it like an expectant pause or a clinical pause. She'll have her eyebrows raised and the expectations that the child's going to do something. Sometimes the child will say words. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they might just gesture, but then we can still praise that, right? Because they're still trying to communicate the next thing. So what I
Dora
want you to...
was really good at that. Like,
yes.
To get,
oh my
like,
gosh.
Speech back. Dora was awesome. She might have been the first one that I've seen growing up to hear that.
Yeah.
And maybe Barney probably had some of that too.
Yeah.
Just pause, but it makes more sense now.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you have a completely different lens than me. Like, I'm just thinking like, oh, that's cool. Like, baby's going to talk back. And you're like, you guys don't know what that's doing.
Yes.
Like, that is helping you so much.
It is. And like Elmo, right? So a lot of those shows will use an expectant pause, which is great. But I want you to use, right, that remote and pause the show and wait. And fun fact, I learned how to speak English with Dora.
There we go.
And Spanish. Because I moved here and I was speaking French and Creole, and they put Dora on there, and I learned Spanish and English at the same time. So, gracias, Dora. I appreciate you. So, yes. So, shows like that where the character waits and they give you time. And the reason why we want that expectant pause is that kids need 5 to 10 seconds to process information. So, even when you ask your child a question, you might think that they don't know the answer, but their brain is just processing. So you have to count, like the 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, you have to count. And a lot of time kids will surprise us. So that's why we want the pause. The other thing that you're going to do is you're going to pause, right? And then you're going to ask questions, right? So like, oh, what is he doing? What's he eating? He's eating a... And then your kid might say, Nana, and you go, banana, that's right. Banana's so yummy, right? And then you might go, we have bananas. And then I want you to bring whatever is happening in the child's, or let me do it the opposite way. We're going to bring whatever's happening on the TV or on the screen to what's happening in their immediate environment. Oh, look, you have a banana. You like bananas. They're so yummy, right? You might get the banana from the kitchen, or you get the play food banana from their like little basket or whatever. And then that way you're associating meaning with something that is 2D, right, that is flat, that is on a screen, to something that they can actually play with. Because a lot of times what will happen is kids will know the banana from looking at the flashcard 5,000 times, or they'll know it from looking at the screen, but then if there's a banana in front of them, they can't name it.
Yeah, they're so like, what is that?
Exactly. So we want to make that association too. So those are the things that I want you to do. Now, screen time is a very hot topic. So the APA, or the AAP, right, which is the American Association of Pediatrics, they don't recommend screen time for kids who are under 2 years. Now, that said, screen time is just, it's a reality for a lot of us. So I think that being mindful about how you use screen time and also limiting the amount of screen time that your child gets is really important, because we do see that with excessive use of screen time, especially when kids are really young, that can impact their speech and language development. So that's just something to keep in mind. And then I want to say one more thing, and let's see if I can remember it. Oh, yes. So looking at the 3 C's, and let's see if I can remember the 3 of them. The first one, so these are like the 3 C's of screen time. And if I can't remember the 3rd, I might have to look it up.
I was definitely about to like pull out my notepad. Too.
Yeah.
Like, 3 C's, I need to write this down. But I forgot I have this recorded. Yes, so this is going to be good.
And then if I can't remember it, I might have to look it up. But it's content, right? What kind of content is your child consuming, right? What does the content look like? Is it fast-paced? Is it super colorful? Blah, blah, blah. And then we want to look at... the context, right, in which that your child is consuming that screen time. We're looking at the length of the context, the length of the screen time, how they're interacting with it, how they can bring what's happening or understand what's happening on the screen to what's happening in their real life. And then we're also going to look at the child. You know your child best, right? So if you know that your child after 30 minutes of screen time is going to be super upset, and they might tantrum or they might get super restless, then you have to make the adjustments based on your child. So those are the 3 C's, is content, context, and then your child.
You are teaching me right now, and I love it. I love it. This has been super good, and I always get amazed by how fast an hour goes by. But I know for a fact the fathers that are listening, mothers that are listening, the ones who aren't mothers or fathers but are listening, is getting so much out of this conversation that we're having. And yeah. And I'm so appreciative of it. And I thank you for taking the time with me today. But before we like step out,
yes,
and before I even ask the advice, I want to take some of these key takeaways so that people can hear. Early intervention. Mm-hmm. Guys, like that is the biggest thing. I heard you say, Joanne, 100 times, like, let's just check. Let's just check. Let's just check. There's nothing wrong with just checking. Number 2 might be play and understand the routines.
Yeah.
Reading is important. Mm-hmm. Knowing what's on the screens is important. Like, these are all powerful tools for speech and language growth. Yeah. And then be mindful of the screen time.
Mm-hmm.
What they're watching at all. Do interactive screen time. Mm-hmm. Grab that remote. Press pause and grab something out of the house. Like, that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
And I understand sometimes people just use it as a break. Set a timer, because you might even forget. Those kids are just sitting on the couch watching whatever they want to or need to.
Yeah.
And if you don't know where to start, when you have those checkup meetings and those milestone meetings with your doctor, Ask them, tell them your concerns. Don't just say, like, I'm good. Yeah. Joanne, what advice do you have for some of the listeners and some of the fathers, parents, when it comes to speech and language therapy and speech language pathologists altogether?
I think a couple of things. One, supporting your child's speech and language doesn't have to be a big production. It could just be reading a book, right? Like once a day. And as a matter of fact, that's something I didn't touch on that I want to touch on before we get off, is that kids who are read to at least once a day for the first 5 years of their lives, they have 290,000 more words by the time they get to their fifth birthday versus a child who's not read to. So even if you don't finish the book, right? Even if you read it for like 2 minutes, which a lot of times that's all they got, right? They got 2 minutes and they're out of there.
Yeah.
Yes. Even if that's what you have, even if you just kind of like point to the pictures and you talk about what you see and you don't have to read word for word, you're already doing something, right? Even if you play for 5 minutes, you're doing great. If you just talk about what you're doing as you're making that sandwich or as you're making those pancakes, you're doing great. It doesn't have to be a production. And then the second thing is that there's always support available and it doesn't have to be scary. I know that going to someone for like to help your child, it seems really scary, but we're nice people. We don't bite. We're very nice. We just want to, you know, play and have fun and make sure that your child is okay. So getting support, right, is very important. And there's so much support available. You can go to your pediatrician. If your child is at school, right, you can have a conversation with a teacher. You can call your child studies team for your district. You can call an SLP directly. There are so many resources. There are courses online. There's milestone information online. And if you have trouble understanding the milestone information or if you're thinking it's not a reputable source, reach out to one of us. We're here. We'll let you know, like, girl, this is not it, right? Like,
that's not it.
Yeah, we'll let you know, this is not it. Here, I'll send you this. Here, I'll direct you this way. So there's so much support available. But I also just genuinely want parents to know, like, you're doing great, right? A lot of families are just like, I'm not doing enough. You're doing great. Parenting does not come with a handbook.
It does not.
It does not. Your child is happy. They're playing. They love being with you. You're doing absolutely great. And then the last thing is, you know your child's best and you're also your child's favorite toy, right? They just want to play with you. They don't care if they have the latest truck or these cards or, you know, the bubbles and the this. They just want to play with you. So I hope that that helps to make somebody feel good today.
Absolutely makes me feel good. Yeah. Because I always feel like my children's toy. They're yes. always on top of me, jumping off, and they just want to throw the ball or do whatever it is, as long as mom or dad is involved.
Yeah.
Joanne, how can the people find you? They got questions. They want to yes. follow your content. They need more tips. Where can they find you?
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram at Beyond Babbel. So BEOYOND. And then BABBLES. And then I'm also on Substack, which is a writing platform where on Instagram, things tend to be very fast paced. People are consuming knowledge like every 5 seconds and they're just kind of scrolling through. So I'm doing a lot of more of my long form writing content on Substack where I talk about the milestones, where I talk about the tips and strategies. And also I'm on Teachable where I have courses for parents. I have daily routines courses and I'm doing early intervention course that is rolling out soon. I do encourage families to check out my newsletter, which you can link to from my website, which is beyondbabbels.com or my Instagram link in bio, because when those updates come out, they go out to my newsletter first. And sometimes Instagram just doesn't see me for a little bit. But the newsletter knows what, you know, everything that is going on. If there are updates, the newsletter will get it. So I do encourage people to follow me on my newsletter. And then also, if you're looking for services in New Jersey, I do have a private practice here in New Jersey. It's in Northern New Jersey. We travel to our clients. So instead of you coming to the clinic, which might feel a little bit, you know, like sterile, we'll just come to your house. Myself or a clinician will come to your house. We'll do an assessment. We'll play with your child. We'll let you know what supports that we think they need, if anything at all. And then we're happy to support families who are local as well.
Awesome. Dads, yeah. Your role in your child's development is bigger than you think it is. Keep talking, keep playing, and keep showing up. If you found this episode helpful, share it with another person, another dad, and let's keep this conversation going. But you heard it here first. Here for the Dads. Out.